Welcome back to the podcast. Oh my gosh, 2024 is a year of all things new and massive breakthroughs. And this podcast episode is no exception. I'm going to be doing something for the first time. I've never done this before. For the past decade and a half, hundreds of people have asked me, who can I trust to go and to do donor conception with? What provider, what bank, what agency? And I have never had an answer. I've never felt confident enough to give anyone an answer until now. Honestly, I've always stayed out of that side of the process, believing that I can help people after they've made the decision. But I really believe in this model. It's finally here, a new model of donor conception. And it's all the things we've been talking about on this podcast for such a long time now. I can't wait to introduce you to my guest today and let her tell you how she's changing the field of donor conception. And you know, I don't take this lightly. I did serious vetting of her and her company before I honestly was willing to talk to her. And now I've gotten to know the process intimately, and it is truly solid and legit and real. And I'm so excited that it's here. And I want to let you know, I'm not getting paid for this. I have never been paid to promote a bank or a provider. I have only been paid for independent counseling services to clients. Okay, before we get into the podcast interview, let's do a recap for those of you who maybe are just jumping into this podcast, and a refresher for those of you who have been listening from the beginning. There are lots of different perspectives out there, and I have interviewed many donor-conceived people and recipient parents on this podcast. And I'm just really thankful that recipient parents have reached out to me and said how valuable this information has been to them, and just your willingness to listen to the voices of donor-conceived people. So let's recap some of the issues that we've covered in this podcast, starting with secrecy and the fact that parents were told by fertility doctors to keep donor conception a secret from their child. We know the distress and harm caused by finding out later in life your donor conceived. And then also, you've heard about the challenges around donor anonymity. So when they don't know who their donor is, sort of that missing medical information, missing pieces of identity or genetic information that can help inform them of who they are, and also of the numerous half-siblings that are out there. And many of you may have seen the recent story with Victoria on CNN, where she accidentally had intimate relationship with her half-brother, had no idea because they were both donor-conceived. This is the type of stuff that we are trying to avoid, and we are trying to help families by, you know, having a new way of doing things. And it can be done. I can't wait for you to hear how. And I'm here with Danielle. And Danielle, she's going to tell you all about her story of how she got into the field. Like, I guess, you know, we all have a little bit of a background story of what brought us here. And so thank you for coming on Three Makes Baby podcast and sharing. I'm really excited about the topic. It's something I've been really passionate about for a long time, but haven't seen a whole lot of resources out there for parents. So I'm excited for you to share your story and the resources that you have available. So I'll let you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, first of all. I'm super excited. I'm a huge fan of you. So it's awesome to be here. So my wife and I started looking for a sperm donor for ourselves to start our family. We now have a 4-month-old that is not letting us sleep at all.
Oh,
it's all been fun.
Yeah. Boy, it's a little boy, right?
It's a little boy.
Yeah.
I don't know where he got that from. Couldn't be me. That's for sure. But we started looking, and of course, the first place we looked, because this is like what advertises the most, it's sperm banks. So we signed up for every single sperm bank we could find. We looked through all of the catalogs of donors and all of that, and something didn't sit right with us. We kept feeling like, there's something like off, right? Like we should know the donor's name, right? We just felt like at the very minimum, if our kids asked us who their donor was, we should know the name, and we shouldn't just say donor 8642 or a fake name or anything like that.
Yeah. Like, is that something that you instinctively felt, or did you have kind of dialogue? Did you know anything beforehand going into it?
We didn't know anything. We just knew there were a few banks that we had heard of. Uh-huh. Just their friends had used that. And yeah, I mean, we even talked to friends and we were like, well, what do you think? Like, how was it using an anonymous donor? And they all had like kids that were like two who hadn't started asking questions yet. And they were like, fine, it's great. And we kept being like, but what happens when they do ask questions? What happens when they're holding up to understand? So my wife's a pediatrician. Her biggest concern was that we wouldn't know updated medical histories or that we couldn't trust the medical histories. My biggest concern was that I didn't like the options and also felt like I can't imagine being a kid wondering a lot of that stuff. Like, I'm a very curious person and I feel like I can't sit still until I know everything.
Me too.
And so, and so we kind of, you know, we started doing some research, right? We started looking into donor conceived people, what they felt, because that is kind of the only way we can really understand what our future kids are going to feel.
Yeah.
So we really did some deep dives. We talked to a lot of people. We joined the Facebook group for donor conceived people. We read like everything we could get our hands on about it. Mm-hmm. And we decided we wanted to use a known donor. After that decision, we asked a friend of mine from law school. And he is human, right?
Yeah.
Like, perfect. And we got pretty far in the process with him. We tested him and we ended up not being able to go forward because we had the same gene in common.
Okay.
But at that moment, I was like, maybe this is not how we should do it either, right? Like, maybe this isn't the perfect way for us either. And I started thinking about all the mutual friends we have from law school and all of the things that we, you know, like the relationship we have with this guy.
Oh, the connections and personal connections. Right? Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And we kind of thought like, it could alter it. Like, it could change things.
Oh, okay.
There could be confusion. I mean, maybe for some people, it's like the best choice. And I totally support that. I think a better choice than anonymous for sure. Yeah. But for us, we really wanted someone we could get to know at the same time. And one of us didn't know the person better and things like that.
Okay. Yeah.
So we started our search and we interviewed over 200 guys, not even joking, for ourselves, over 200.
For yourselves, by yourselves, on your own.
Yep, my wife was in residency and I was at a law firm working all the time. And we
How did you even do that? Like, how did you even find people?
People are like, we found this out, like
social
this community.
Media?
Yeah, social media and like friends of friends of friends. And we kind of just like
just ask around. These,
right? We asked around.
Yeah.
People knew someone that might be willing to donate that like fit our criteria. We interviewed over 200 people. And we landed on the most perfect donor. Like, we could not adore him more. He has like even little things that we have like in common with us. And like, we've all loved Nutella, right? Like, who even thought that that would matter? But for us, oh my God, we all have like a total obsession with it.
You're bonding over something. That's important. Yeah.
And like, he has this beautiful relationship with his grandmother who recently passed. And I also had that. And my wife had that with a grandfather. And like, it was really important to know that, like, you know, we found someone who also feels that value towards like family and grandparents and stuff.
Was your interview process intensive or was it kind of more casual talking or was it like a systematic?
I would say both. I would say like, it's just a conversation at first, but then when we started talking about medical history, it was a little bit more formatted because there was something we wanted to make sure that we knew. Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
But yeah. So we felt like you did, right? Like, there's no resources for this. It feels impossible. Like, we had so many hurdles thrown at us. And we were like, if we were any other person, we probably would have given up, right? There's like not.
I think that happens a lot. I think people give up a lot. Yeah.
And I get it. Like, it's really hard.
Can you tell me about some of the hurdles?
Yeah. We were first with a fertility clinic that said that they wouldn't accept known donors.
Just period, end of story? Just
They said you have to go through a sperm bank. And we pushed back and they finally said, well, you can use a known donor, but they have to donate at a sperm bank. And we were like, well, what if we don't want to deal with sperm banks at all? Like, can't the donor donate to a clinic? Like, you have the same things that they do. So we switched clinics after that and had a hard time. Another hurdle was that no one was really telling us all the steps that were necessary. So we'd be like, okay, I think we're ready to start the donations. And they'd be like, wait a second, did you do this?
Did you do that? Yeah.
And that's great. I love that all those things are in place. I think they're all there for a reason, but someone needs to kind of explain what the steps are and how to go through them in what order and all that stuff.
Now, is it because they didn't the clinics themselves didn't know the steps, or because they just didn't have the staff to educate and didn't take the time to educate you on those steps? What do you know? Or was it a combination? Or
I think probably a combination, because a lot of people don't end up using known donors, right? They go through the bank, so they're used to that. I do think there's about one person on staff at every clinic that handles people who want to use known donors. And that,
or donor period.
No, I think more, well, maybe donor period, but really the donor period is just accepting the vials of sperm from a sperm bank, right?
Okay. Okay.
There's not too much to that.
Or coordinating getting the psych evals and stuff. Cause I'll have like that, my point person that I send my reports to. And a lot of times their title is third party or donor coordinator. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So they really only have one or two of those at every clinic. So yeah, it was just like, it was hard, right? There was so many things. We just felt like we kept thinking we were done. And then there's another thing and there's another thing and there's another thing. And it was even more complicated because our donor lives in Italy. And so we had to fly him back for stuff. And we really had to get a grasp on everything that was needed because we didn't want to keep bothering him being like, there's another step and another step.
Yeah.
So through doing that, we were like, we need to make this more accessible to people. Like we need to offer a way to meet known donors and a way to go through the steps without absolutely feeling desperate and like just
exhausted. And on your own and lost and confused and and no one's really there to support you, right? Because in fact, you might have the opposite, which is, oh, this is too much work. I've had people tell me that their doctors told them not to do known donation because it's too much work and it's costs a lot more money is what they say too. I've heard that.
Yeah. Not quite accurate, but yeah. That's, I mean, it all depends on how many vials you need, right? Like it's hard to buy it until you know how many vials you'll end up using. But
yeah, it was hard for me to understand why it would be more. I remember going, why is it more to use a known donor when there isn't the profit margin that the banks, you know, you take out the profit margin from the banks. Why is it more? It made no sense to me.
Yeah.
Can you help me understand that?
Sure. So yeah, legal fees, right? You wouldn't need to hire a lawyer if you were going through the banks, and you do need a lawyer, and the donor should have his own lawyer as well. So you're looking at like $1,500 to $2,000 for both lawyers in that range.
And that's because with the sperm bank, they already have the sort of the contracts that are already developed.
So sperm banks have an agreement with the donor, and you don't know the donor's identity. So it's impossible to enter into an agreement with someone where you don't even know the name of the person. So you're just buying from the sperm bank, agreeing that you won't even ever try to contact the person until your kids are 18 at the minimum. And then after 18, there's no custody issues, right? There's no custody period.
It still seems undefined.
It's right. Because,
So are they really protected going through a bank?
I totally get that because I view it, and I don't have a legal background in exactly this, but I have a legal background in general. And I view it as like a contract between two parties is safer than a contract between a third party who has a contract with that party, right?
Yeah.
It seems like more direct to just go right to the source, have a contract. Right. You are not the parent. You don't ever owe us child support, like very clear.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer. I think what the banks are relying on is that no one will know of the identity of the donor until kids are 18. And by then there's no issue, but there's 20.
But we know that's over now. Yeah, that's so over. And so it's like, I'm kind of like you. It's like having the contract direct with your donor with your known donor feels more secure in the long run.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
From the beginning. So yeah, tell me more about that parental rights and that contract where you can relinquish, where the donor relinquishes parental rights and you can feel confident as, you know, two parents in, or a single parent, that you can feel confident in your parental rights and it won't be taken away from you.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of like checks and balances in this whole system, right? If it's done the right way. Mm-hmm. I think the first step is having a lawyer who drafts the agreement, not pulling a random agreement offline and editing it yourself, right?
No templates, please.
So hiring a lawyer to draft the agreement, then making sure the donor gets a lawyer for himself to make sure he under a separate lawyer, not part of the same firm, nothing like about it, right? So there's no conflict.
Absolutely.
And making sure he totally understands everything about that agreement so that there's no way a donor can come back in the future and say, I didn't really get it. I didn't have a lawyer explaining it to me, right? We want them to have a lawyer. We want them to feel like they have their own answer. The third part is the psychological evaluations, right? And you can speak to this way better than I can, obviously, but having someone that has, like someone that has, you know, has a background in this, that has met the donor and says, you know, I've talked to him. He understands he's not a parent. He understands he's a donor. he's of a safe age. He's not 18. Right. He's like of a good mindset. Like there's no big red flags that make me think he can't make a decision. Right. Yeah. Having that is an extra safety net for the legal agreement. It is something that like you could always be called as an expert witness to like talk about when you met the donor. You could, your report could be used, right? Like all of that.
Right.
Then we get to the part of second parent adoption. That is a bolster in all of it, right?
Okay.
You are literally the other parent who's not genetically related, if there is one, is adopting the child so that the same rights as an adopted child in like a family.
Legal rights.
Right, legal adoption.
We did that with our daughter and there were no questions. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's, I mean, otherwise how could adoptions happen? Like everyone would be so scared of adopting if their rights could not be protected. Right.
That's
so
that's right.
Yeah. It's the same as this. So you, I mean, there's like five things you can do, you know, to make sure that
we can talk about what you're offering now. And that's people can actually have like someone to help them through this process.
Yeah. So we are like kind of a full service agency, right? So you come to us and you say, like, we really want to use a known donor for these reasons, whatever the reasons are. And we don't have anyone in our life that we want to use. So like, is there some way like you can help us, right? And so we basically give people a lot of options that match their criteria. They look at the options, they decide who their favorite options are. They get more information on those options. And what they're getting is like family pictures, right? Like parents, siblings, like getting to know what the whole family looks like, which sperm banks don't offer. Baby pictures and adult pictures, not just baby pictures or just one picture as an adult. Information like what their siblings do for jobs, what their parents do for jobs, like what they were like as a kid, just like getting a full picture of who this person is.
Yeah.
Then they decide two people they want to meet with and they move forward with one.
Two people. Okay. And that's because sometimes things don't work out with one, their first pick, right?
It's because I think like meeting with two and being able to contrast them and to decide like what personality is better for them is like better than just picking one and then feeling obligated to move forward with that one.
Yeah. I actually went in the process of talking to people, parents that are choosing, I actually, that's very common. It's they'll come to me and they'll say, we've narrowed it down to two.
Yeah. It's kind of nice to do that. Cause then you're like, okay, one of these two, but here are the pros, both of them. So
yeah.
Then we help them through all the steps. So we find clinics for the donor to donate with. We find a place for the donor to do a semen analysis. We make sure that they do the genetic testing if needed, if they have a carrier.
Okay.
We make sure that
they... Do they have to do it every time? Is it standard that they do that carrier screening or is it depend on the facility?
It is standard that they recommend it. I think that there's probably religious reasons that some people say they don't want to do it. And I haven't...
That they're okay. Are they able to be exempt from that?
I think
religious.
Yeah, I think that's
okay.
It's like the same reason that if someone does IVF, they don't want to test embryos because they would still use the embryo anyway because they, you know, it's so.
Oh, got it. Yeah. Okay.
So we help them through all the steps. We help them find providers. We help them find lawyers. We help them find everyone that they need to make sure they do all the steps. We do everything except for making the appointments, right? And like they pay directly to the providers so that we don't have to.
Yeah, that's important that they do that too anyway, because I know I sometimes have agencies reach out and try to make an appointment for their people, their parents or their carriers, and then that person, things get lost. So it's like it's better if they just make it for themselves. Yeah. Plus consent too. They need to be able to do consent for themselves as well. So yeah. So then I love that. And I can already hear parents out there that I've worked with in the past going, where were you? Where were you? Because I needed you. And yeah, I mean, I think it's such a great service because it's so complex and there's so many things that you don't know. So it's nice to have you supporting them through that.
And it's hard to know what questions to ask, right? Like if you're calling a clinic for a donor to donate, to be able to say like, do you have a quarantine period? Like, you know, how do you work with another clinic? Like just asking to make sure that there's not going to be an extra bump in the road with that.
So true. There's so many times clients will call me and they don't even know what their clinic needs. I'm just like, oh gosh, I've always thought a facilitator that would help people through this process would be amazing.
Yeah.
So it sounds like that is really the role you take on. And then you saw this need, you saw you guys had this need, and then you thought, we can do this. We could provide this. And you learned so much along the way, right? In your own process that just that knowledge you got like, I can help someone else with this knowledge now.
Yeah, I know. I feel like we've like figured this out, right? Like we figured out all the bumps that could come up. We figured out how to like vet for them before to make sure that they're not going to happen. So people don't feel like they're too deep into one clinic. And then a clinic says, well, actually we need these 10 steps that nowhere else needs. And then they have to like All those. We've really like figured out the system and figured out how to like manage it as much as possible. There's always some things we can't foresee, but we got them.
Well, that's just the process itself. You know, fertility treatments just in general are so twisty and turny. What, how many, like, so right now, when you say like you can match people or just give them choices, do you have a list of donors you're working from? Do you have kind of like, are you getting in new donors? How does that process work on your
side? Yeah. So we have almost 200, actually, we might have surpassed 200 in the last like,
we have 200 to choose
from. 200 to choose from, obviously, of like many different ethnicities, backgrounds, like hair colors, everything. But we, once I see what people, you know, are looking for, I give them as many choices as humanly possible, right? Like I don't cap people like a certain amount. I just give them everyone that might fit their criteria and they tell me who they'd like to move forward with. We are constantly adding to that list. I was literally just on the phone with the donor who and taking his information. So we're constantly adding to it. Like,
how do they find you?
A lot of them is word of mouth, right? So one donor who's donated for us like asks around his friends or tells them that he donated and they're like, I would do that. That sounds amazing. And a lot of it is that they're a lot of them are gay men. And sperm banks do not allow gay men to donate. So
that's right. They don't, which is it's FDA.
It is FDA. Yeah. It's not even in the FDA regulations. It's that they would fail the FDA like questionnaire if they answered that they've had sex with a man in the last 5 years.
Yeah. Which is
it's a long time.
You know, it's so outdated. It's unbelievable that and it's unbelievable and it's not because the government moves so slow. I mean, that's how the government moves.
So you know, they just they're gonna like fix that for blood donations. That they would also fix it for this.
Because I'm surprised it didn't happen.
Yeah.
What are you finding that the gay men? This is a way they can, you know, help another family create a family while also being, you know, being part of it in somewhat. And tell me a little bit about being part of it. Cause I think right now I hear the objections to, no, we don't want to know this person. We don't want them in our life. This isn't, you know, and that can be really kind of scary and a lot for people. So do you want to, if we can talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I'll start there. So the only thing that parents have to agree to working with us is that they will give the donor a once a year update about kids. It can be a text message with a picture saying like, you know, she's in kindergarten, she loves music, whatever the little...
Yeah, something simple.
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Part of the reason is because a big part of why donors are willing to donate with us versus like a man or somewhere else is that they get to have that happiness of knowing that kids are safe, that they're being like well-raised, that they are happy, right? And like... do they have anything in common with the kids, right? Like, did they get their musical ability? Did they like play baseball? Like, there's something biological to want to know.
It's powerful. It's powerful. Do you find that that is a big motivation?
I would say it's a huge motivation. Yeah. I think it's something where people are
I love
like,
that they care.
Yeah, they really you care. Know? I think they're like, yeah, it's very nice for them to know that like they get to feel happy about their decision to do this for like years to come, right? It's not just like wondering what happened.
It's like being invested, but not overly invested.
No.
And that's the line we're walking. Right. Okay, let's talk about that line. Because I think that's what everybody gets scared of is like, it's either this or it's that.
Yeah.
But there's like so much in between, you know, that you can have.
So basically what I tell donors is like, if you're okay with that minimum, then like, amazing. Like if you're okay with just getting a once year update and maybe even never meeting the kids, like that is great. Then like you qualify.
Okay. Okay.
But what I also tell donors is that there are a lot of families because there are some of our families that would even prefer more than that. They'd prefer to let kids get to know the donor at a young age so that they don't have these underlying questions. They prefer to like, as soon as kids start asking questions, to be able to answer them or have him answer them. And I kind of just say like, this is something you all should talk about during your call. Like what's the ideal, you know, situation for everyone and making sure everyone feels comfortable with that. But what I also do is part of the reason that we have that once a year update is that I really, really, really I want kids to get an updated medical history. Half of their genes come from this person, right? It is unfathomable that like they don't know half of their medical history for 18 years or more, or for the rest of their life.
It's hard because you go through, I mean, as an adoptee, and I didn't have any of it, it was like this, there was this thing all unknown. It's like, you never know, like, am I at risk for cancer? Am I at risk with it? I have no idea. And it makes you just feel very powerless.
Yeah.
Like you can't take the action or the prevention that you need to.
And so, same with your daughter, right? Huge. Like just wondering like,
yeah.
Is she safe? Exactly. Is she getting like, and as a parent, especially like that weighs on you so much of just knowing I might not be protecting my kid in the best way. And so we really, really wanted to fix this. And so generally speaking, unlike sperm banks, what we do is we tell them they qualify no matter what, as like, you know, to be a donor, for no matter what their medical history is. What it also does is it makes them more honest about their medical history. Yeah. And everyone has a medical history. All of us. I have it. I probably wouldn't qualify as an egg donor, right? But everyone has it. And what I want to do, and what I want to do is like give them a safe place to say it without them feeling like it's going to disqualify them. Because I think where sperm banks run into issues is they say, we only accept 0.1% of people who apply and you have to have a perfect medical history. Of course, people are going to come in and say, yep, perfect medical history. I don't know anything.
And what a weird thing to do. We accept the best of the best, but
like they're bragging
on, but hang on. Like you don't know for sure. Like you said, it's self-report. So you don't know, right. You're not verifying their medical history. So you don't know if they really are that great. And why the only reason you're having to say they're the cream of the crop is because you're keeping parents away from them, right? No pun intended. It's because you're keeping them apart, right? So you're having to guarantee or make this appearance of a system that's somehow protecting the recipient parent, but really you're keeping this information from them, you know?
Right.
We don't have, it doesn't have to be perfect. The donors don't have to be perfect. We just need to know information. We just need to know what's going on. That's it.
Yeah. And be able to screen for it. Like, and a lot of times it's environmental, right? Like a grandparent has lung cancer because they were a smoker. Yep. Like,
yeah.
As long as we know the background of why, then people can use their own judgment or research to decide that it's not a problem.
Or it's like anxiety runs in my family. And you know what? That's okay, because if the donor has anxiety and takes medication for it, who cares? Because we all have anxiety. Yeah. They'll fit in just great. You know, like that. Right. It doesn't have to be a disqualifier, but a lot of times people are disqualified if they take medication for depression or anxiety. They're disqualified. What? Like a lot of people take medication for anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
It's just, it's weird criteria that people are being disqualified for. So
I agree.
Yeah.
And height too. It's like,
they did change that recently, but yeah, for many years, they had to be over like 6 feet tall. And it's crazy because you get half your genes from the other, another side that you could be.
Right.
So it made no sense. It doesn't make any sense.
And it's also, I've had a lot of clients come to me. And I've had a lot of clients come to me saying we would prefer a short donor, like 5'6 to 5'10. And I'm like, oh, you wouldn't have even been able to find that.
It didn't exist.
It's just,
It really is. So yeah, so the benefits also is, so you get to know this person, you get to pick the person, you meet them before you choose them?
Yes, you meet them before you choose them, and it has to be a mutual match.
Okay,
so the donor also has to feel comfortable, because we don't want this to be a blank check for their DNA. And obviously, if something went wrong, I would offer another match. Like, that's no problem. Okay. But I really want to make sure that all parties feel comfortable, because it's not a fun experience for anyone if one party is reluctant or unhappy.
Now, does that do your recipient parents, prospective parents get nervous about like being chosen? Like, what if they don't like me? Do you go?
They feel like it's like a first date, right?
Yeah.
Like they're just like, am I going to say the wrong thing? But at the end, I think like they feel safer knowing that the donor also wanted to move forward with them, so they don't feel like they just feel happier. They're like, oh, he likes us too. Like now we're even more excited.
For sure.
So it's like oh my god, the happiness that these people have, like once they've all met and they all just like they realize they have something in common and they all talk about it. Or we recently have a client who literally invited their donor to their wedding, and he like, you know, teared up and he was like so heartfelt. And it was just,
you should do videos about showing these stories.
No, I should.
They would be beautiful stories, and just to show people and bring awareness to this. And, you know, I just saw a TikTok about a girl, a lady, she's got like 9 million followers on TikTok, and she is her and her wife. I don't think they're trying yet, but she was, she had two moms. And she knew her donor. Her donor was a friend of theirs, and she always knew him. And he was in their life, or he was in her life, and it was just like cool. And like, this is a story that's out there, and we want to hear more stories like that, because instead of the scary stories where, you know, people lose custody, because, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. I love that you're out there and offering this to people now. Do you have to spend a lot of time educating people that are afraid?
I would say like some people ask about the recent cases. And if you really look into the details of the case that, you know, everyone is talking about, the Oklahoma case, They did everything
wrong,
not by the book.
Yeah,
right?
Like, and just to kind of rehash that, just for those that you're listening that don't know that case, there was a case that where the judge ruled in favor and granting custody to the donor, but that word donor isn't even accurate because he wasn't a donor. He was the ex-husband of one of the partners, and right, one of the
husband.
Oh, I thought they were he was ex, so they were still married. I thought that they were. She was remarried and. But you may not, you tell you what you know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought it was that they did like at home insemination.
They did at home insemination. Yeah.
We're not sure how. And then the legal agreement was like a boilerplate legal agreement that didn't really, where the woman who was not genetically related to the child didn't even sign it. She was not even mentioned in the entire agreement.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't do second parent adoption. They didn't. I think the donor definitely did not have his own lawyer. So they didn't really go through any.
He didn't ever relinquish parental right from what I understand. So this was like a very much like a, didn't go through the steps at all. And what you're doing is actually have a list of steps that you're making sure people go through to give them that added, that protection. Yeah. So that case is definitely an outlier. And it's not to say that you shouldn't like, of course, educate yourself, get the information and do all that you can to protect your family. But like, make sure that it's not just a scare tactic into forcing you into thinking that you have to choose to use a bank. And I want to make it clear, you're not a bank, right? You're not a sperm bank. Okay.
No, we're like a matchmaking service.
Okay.
And I don't know, like a counselor to help you go through all the steps, right? We're like a matching
agency.
Exactly.
And then do you also help, you said you help with these contracts. Do the clinics accept the contracts or do the clinics want their own, their clients and patients to sign their own internal contract about the known donation?
They have their own contracts just saying like you release liability and things that.
Okay.
But there's
no
contract between the donor and the client that has to go through the clinic.
Okay.
The only thing the clinic usually asks to see, so usually they ask to see just a letter from the lawyer saying there is a contract, both parties had a lawyer, and the contract has been signed or notarized or whatever is necessary in that state. But I will say that we recently had one clinic that said, please send us your contract. And the clients were like, excuse me, like that's like a private document between our parties. And like, we're not even like, why would you ask for that?
Yeah.
So that was a little disheartening. But generally speaking, they will accept just the letter saying that there is a contract.
I'm trying to think, is there anything else you can think of sharing? Because now I don't want to go off on.
Go back to the question about gay guys and gay men that are donating and how, like what their motives are.
Yes.
So I would say most of the gay men who are donating may want kids. Like that's something they're not sure about, or just like they're not, they have a later decision point than a lot of women do. Biological clock. But a lot of them understand. They understand the struggle. They understand what it would be like when they would, or if they had needed an egg donor.
Right.
A lot of them say, we totally get how hard this decision is. Like we get how it feels impersonal, how there's going to be half siblings. Like there's all these issues that we also have to grapple with. And we want to help make a difference because like pay it forward, right? Like let's help other people in the way that we would need help one day. So that would be the biggest reason. I would say most people aren't doing it for the money. A lot of them are just like, okay, I don't even care. Like that's fine. You know, the payment towards donors, just to be completely transparent, is $5,000. And the cap of families is 3 families.
That's
so I will never, $5,000 per family. I will never, ever, ever match a donor with more than 3 families. And so we want to like really reduce the amount of like half siblings there are out there for people and just like families that are out there that they have to all keep track of.
That's who.
So that was our big thing. And I think that's why we kind of upped the amount, like to make it 5,001. I think it is a lot of time and a lot of these people are professionals and it's not just like they're in college. They come, you know, come through after school or like, you know, in between classes to like donate. It's a longer process, right? Like they're going through the legal agreement for all 3 clients. They're going through the psychological evaluations for all 3 clients. So we wanted to make sure that they were paid fairly for their time.
Okay.
And also because it's a lifelong decision. Like this isn't something where like people should be doing it to make like a quick $100, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to take time in their future to connect with kids and everything like that.
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say is that makes sense that they understand that they, you know, you need help to have a baby. And so they want to be, you know, they want to kind of pay it forward in a way. And then also your point about not recruiting or not having them be college students and being like 18 years old where they're, so do you have an age minimum then?
Yeah. So 24 is our youngest donor. And then 42 is our oldest donor currently, although I don't really have a cap on that as much. I kind of believe that, you know, parents should be able to decide what age they're comfortable with.
Yeah.
But yeah, we don't want to accept people who are doing it because they are in school and they're just kind of like not thinking through the decision. And also, I do believe that 18-year-olds don't know their medical history. First of all, they're 18. They don't have their own medical history very much, very often, right? Mm-hmm. And the other part is that their parents aren't trusting them with that information at 18. A lot of like parents just kind of wait till boys are older to tell them information. And at that point, they're not old enough to make a decision like this. And they're not old enough to know their family medical history. So I will never start asking like people, and I will never accept anyone in college.
I think that's great. I think there's a lot of donors that donated at that age and did not realize what they were getting into. Right. And now they're kind of dealing with the consequences. And what that leads to is then in the future, because they did sign up for it, but they didn't understand the psychosocial aspects of it. And so when a person contacts them to know more about them, it's very common for them to not want contact.
Right, of course.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love that your donors are prepared, they're informed, they're ready to go. And you talked earlier about, you know, the matching process and they being mutually accepted. So they both have to agree. Do they then, they tell you afterward, like, let's say a meeting, sounds like most of the time it goes pretty well, but let's say one where it's like, we just didn't quite connect and, you know, great guy, or we liked each other, but just didn't connect. Like, that's not the one. Do they tell you that, or do they tell each other that? How does that work?
Yeah. So they do tell me no matter what, like, you know, that didn't work out for this reason, but they also do have to turn down the donor that they don't move forward with. I think it's more of a personal connection that way. Like, I feel like if they just tell me and I tell them, it's just kind of like, all right, but the donor took time to talk to you or whatever, right? So okay. I've never had a donor turn down a client, really. One of them wanted time to think about it, but they ended up picking the other donor anyway. Okay. And then we did actually the other day have a client and a donor that had a whole conversation. They adored each other. And then they started talking about where they were both from. And they realized that they grew up in the same neighborhood. Like, both of them live in different areas, but they grew up with, like, they go to the same Target. They go to the same grocery stores. And they were like, both of them have parents that still live there, and one lives really close by. And so they were kind of like, maybe that's probably not, like, that's a little close for comfort. Yeah. So they both like mutually agreed. And so I gave the clients like a different person to meet with, and they were happy. But yeah, generally speaking, the meetings go so well. And if I feel like personalities won't get along, I'll kind of give them a heads up and being like, yeah, I think you should probably lean more towards this one if it were me, you know, things like that. But
yeah.
But yeah, they would tell me and they would tell each other, because I want open communication and everyone to feel like they heard from the source.
I mean, I like that. It's so much more adult.
Yeah,
like we're just talking it. We're working through this stuff. And also it's a good precedent to set for that ongoing relationship, whether it's close, whether it's not close, whether it's just a picture once a year, or whether it's more, you know, information. It sets that a good communication pattern up from the start. So
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
That's awesome.
And respect and everything. Yeah.
Very good.
I think I'm hoping this is like the way that people do things, even through not through us, right? Like, I'm hoping people really like take the time to think about what kids are going to feel and what like communication going forward looks like, and, you know, not having kids spend hours and hours like on 23andMe and Ancestry, like trying to just track everything back, right?
Yeah. And not having dozens and dozens of half siblings and not knowing when that's going to end. You know, not knowing, like, I could be 55 and I'm still getting a new sibling, you know, that's hard, because it's just, you don't get that point where you can just settle in. Like, this is my family. This is my story. You're constantly like, what else? What else? It's the unknown. Like, yeah. So it's nice that you have that limit to three, and then that they can know. So it's not, they're not developing that fantasy. I talk about sort of when kids don't know who that significant genetic person is, that they tend to fill it in with a gap or with an imagination and with their imagination. And it could be somebody who doesn't really live up to that potential, you know, in real life. And so then there's these like polarizing viewpoints of this person who's just a real human. You know, they're going to have flaws, they're going to have strengths, but as a young child who's trying to make sense of it, it can be hard to know that when you don't know who that person is. And so,
right.
And then just not having the fear of the unknown of what if this person turns out to be to not like me, not want to have anything to do with me, you know, deny I exist, or it's just a bad person, you know? So yeah, those are all things that you can kind of, you know, not to say that you know, you're always going to be close with your donor. I mean, like I talk about, relationships can ebb and flow and you might go distant and that's okay. It's just that, you know, it's not a complete mystery of who that person is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even at the very minimum, right, kids can say, well, tell me about my donor, right? Tell me what he was like. And you can say, I met him. He was amazing. We talked about this. Like, we took this video after to like talk about how excited we were. We went and met him. We have a picture with him. Like, there's so much like that can be said to just having a story about this person.
Yeah, because that's what we do. That's what family life is, really, is storytelling. It's
right. Like, imagine a grandparent that died before a kid was born and just being able to say, yeah, let me tell you stories about your grandparent. Like, that's important to them. Yeah.
And it's not so much that when I say family is about storytelling. It's not that we're saying that that person is a family member, because that's why it gets hard for people, because they think, well, oh, wait, if it's, you know, if he's a biological person or a genetic person and I know him, does that mean he's dad? No. And that's why it's so hard to explain to people that you can have both a family that you call family and that you see and you're raised with and you live with. And then you can have significant people who aren't playing that role. They're not that role in your life, but they are still connected to you by genes or whatever. And you may not, you know, it doesn't mean you have to have a relationship with them. You may not, but how do we help people understand that that doesn't mean they're a parent just because they're known to you?
Look, like if you're having a kid and you're putting all this thought into having a kid and finding a donor and finding the right person, you are going to be enough for that kid. There is no one else outside of you and your significant other, whoever, right? That there's no one else that they need as a parent. They have that. Mm. So I would say anything else is just a curiosity about genetics, which is a basic human feeling, right? Like, we want to know where we came from. We want to know what we have in common that genes are contributing, right? Like, I have a friend who found out she was donor conceived late in life, and she spent 3 days straight not sleeping, trying to figure out who she came from. And it was a total shock. She did 23andMe and saw all these people, and she was like, I didn't think I was this, like, you know, background, ethnicity, whatever. And she's like, what is this? And so she figured it out. She found like an aunt. She traced it back to who she was related to. And our friend is literally a lawyer who is amazing at finance. She's a tax lawyer who can like buy stocks and the stocks go up like the next day. She's so good. She's like innately good. Yeah. And her parents have no ability to be good at money. They have no ounce in them that is good at money. She handles their finance. And when she found out who her donor was, she found out that he is a finance person. And it was like this awakening of being like, this is where I come from. Like, this is my genes of like why I got the brain that I have. And like all of her questions were answered just knowing that about like her, like her passions and like what she's good at. Right.
Yeah.
And she had the unfortunate event of reaching out to him and he said, leave me alone. Never contact me again. I was 18 when I donated. It was at college and I never want to hear from you again. And he was pretty rough about it. And that impacted her so much. She wasn't ever going to look at him like a parent. There was no part of her that was ever going to think of him as a parent, but she wanted answers. She wanted medical history updates. She wanted to know what he's good at, to know if like she was good at the same things, right? Like, she wanted to know what his kids were like, to see if she looks like them. Like, it's a biological
yourself. And so it's like identity discovery. And
yeah,
so I talk a lot about identity development, and it's not because I think genetics determine our identity 100%. No, they don't. There's epigenetics, there's environment. Of course, it's a huge part. And I know that. I'm like the living example because I was adopted and I met my birth family and I know them, and then my family, my real family. And so I can see where I got what I got from both. But that's what's so awesome is I get to now finally see what I got from both and what makes me. And it's just this process of self-discovery that you can help your child with too. You know, anyway, so it's just like you start to love your child and see them for this unique individual person. And what matters most is that, it's not about us. And I know that's a process. Listen, I would love to. You want to see yourself and your kid and, you know, all that stuff. It becomes very much like an extension of you, but you start to see them as their own person. And that's
yeah.
Yeah. So if,
no, I mean, yeah.
Even if you use an anonymous donor and you're out there going, God, I wish we had known Danielle and her company name, which we needed to say is this the Seed Scout. Even if I had known about the Seed Scout, I wish I had known. I wish I had done it differently. There's a lot of regrets. I would just say to you, it's okay. There are still there are still things you can do to help you and your child with their identity development and discovering who they are. The whole thing about what I'd love to see more is and be able to show people more is how people navigate this relationship, a known donation relationship with boundaries from the start. And that's what you're providing the model to right now.
I think that's the way amazing. To do it, right? Like to be able to just say the minimum that we're able to offer, the minimum that you offer, and then anything else that we can figure out that make, you know, each other happy, then we should like talk about that and figure that out, right? Like this is, it needs to be good for everyone, but also you're the parents, right? Like you get to make these decisions about what's best for your kid, and the kid gets to make decisions about what they're comfortable with. And those things need to be like very, very much like cherished.
You have a role after they're matched and the baby's here?
I don't, because so it's interesting because I was just told about like a different type of agency that matches people, but it's still anonymous. They meet, but they don't know each other's names. And then they have to like only talk through a lawyer. And that sounds like hell, right? To me, like, I'm just like, I would rather, like, I want people to just text each other when they're or like FaceTime each other, right? Like, I want this to feel natural and not to feel like they have to go through a third party who then mediates a conversation. Like, that is not a known, it is a known donor, but it's different, right? It's a different kind of relationship. So no, I don't. But obviously, like if anyone had any problems reaching someone or anything like that, I'm always here for that kind of stuff.
Tell people this can be done. So I'm very excited. I'm very excited.
Me too. I'm really hoping this makes a big difference for like a lot of families. And I cannot wait to hear about like kids meeting donors and like how exciting that is for them or getting their questions answered. Like, I can't wait to get all those pictures and information. So.
And then just even hearing from them in the future and like hearing the stories of this is how it worked for us. Oh gosh. Yeah.
Or like getting Christmas cards. Like, I'm going to start putting that in my contract. Like, you have to send me a Christmas card.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well,
how can people get in touch with you? What's the best way to find you or the easiest way to find you?
Yeah, just to go to theseedscout.com. We have like a bunch of ways that you can say, like contact us, reach out, things like that. And I'm like always here. I'm happy to help. I'm also happy to have like, I have a free consultation with everyone before they sign up just to kind of inform people of what's necessary, even if they want to go a different route, just to make sure that they are doing everything, crossing all their T's, dotting all their I's. I think it's so important because there's so many people meeting on social media or like, you know, on different apps and things like that, and no one's there to guide them. So I really want to make sure they know what steps they should be taking to protect themselves.
That's great. And then you're also on social media at, what is your, at the Seed Scout?
I think so. Yeah, it's the Seed Scout. I'm so bad at social media. Yeah.
At the Seed Scout. So do you do direct message? So if they want to DM you, they can do that too. Absolutely. Okay, awesome.
Yeah, I'm very reachable. As all the clients will say, I answer way too fast, I think, but...
Well, I will vouch for you, Danielle, and say to anyone listening and watching that definitely reach out. And I mean, you're a wealth of information and so helpful. And I'm just super, super happy to see this available for people out there. I know, I can tell you people, my clients have been asking for this for years.
Yeah, I know.
And to see, to have you out there feels like I need to pinch myself a little bit. So
we're really excited to be like, you know, leading this a little bit and to hopefully make it more accessible for people in any way possible, because I think that's the biggest barrier. So
thank you for listening, you guys. I did that interview a couple months ago, actually. And since then, I cannot tell you the amount of people who have reached out. They've already heard about the Seed Scout. They've reached out. They've wanted to know more. This company is shaking things up. Take it from me. There's a lot I know, and I can't necessarily say, but wow, it's the beginning of a new and great thing. And I couldn't be more happy for all of you out there who are struggling with infertility, donor conceived, LGBTQ+, recipient parents, like all of you that are just looking and wanting a better way to do this. So thank you to all the donor conceived people out there who continue to tirelessly and thanklessly advocate for the future generations of donor-conceived people and their families. And big announcement is this year's International Donor Conception Awareness Day is April 27th. You guys, we're in year four. And this year's theme, I am excited to announce, is valuing the voices of donor-conceived people. We started with discussions and then we went on to truth and transparency. You know, we can't get anywhere if we don't know the truth of who we are. And the next foundational element is for us to listen to those who have the lived experience of walking in those shoes, and they can inform us and make this better. So this year, I'm going to be stepping aside and letting donor-conceived people use their voice. To learn more, head over to DonorConceptionAwarenessDay.com and learn how you can participate.